Blog Talk Radio.
Real sports guy. People's Radio. It's RSG up in your headphones. Allow me to introduce
the illustrious Queen Anne Hoops. Marcus the Game Changer. The Seventh Jackson. D. Will. The Ill Executive. He's like Suge Knight without the anger management issues. Phil T, the sports PhD. This dude is coming at you from all angles. He's got all the bases covered. There's not a whole lot about sports this brother don't know.
Can you dig it, sucker?
Featuring Ray, Justin Page. Eric Hamilton.
RNG fan is like, woo!
Nah, I blame it on Nintendo.
It's definitely a gin party around here. Definitely a gin party.
Don't bring any Kool-Aid.
You don't get no better than this, baby.
I want winners. You better act like this. Pick it up a little bit. Okay? Get your chin up. Smile. Smile. Anybody can be peachy.
Don't get no more real.
Welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. RSG, Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital Solutions. Cool. Back again for another Tuesday night of hot sports radio. All right, I am Marcus the Game Changer, and I'd like to welcome you to another edition of the Real Sports Guys. Before we get into the proceedings this evening, we got so much to get into. I got to introduce you to the other two-thirds of the illustrious three-man booth. On my right, I got my man, D. Wills. Holla at the people.
Hey, what's good, Brian? I'm about to foul like Louisville players fouling a Griner in the post. I'm about to get physical like that. I'm about to, you know, get my elbows going with some of these topics we got going on tonight. It's some stuff that is boiling me up a little bit that we're going to get into.
Oh, Louisville brought it, man. Louisville brought it, man. You see old girl did the little reverse layup on Griner, then stared her down with chest, went head to chest with her because she wasn't tall enough to go chin to chin. Yeah, man, don't mess with Britt, man. But they put it on them, man. Hats off to Louisville, the women's team. Hats off to the men team. Wow, man. We'll get into that. I'm not gonna give up too much. We'll get into that in a little bit. But Louisville's representing right now, both men's and women's hoops teams playing well in April. That's a good sign. Good for the folks down in Kentucky because the Wildcats, the men Wildcats, let you down a little bit. But we still got one more third of the three-man booth to introduce. Special guest tonight, we got LR, Larry Randall, CEO of Resistance Digital Solutions. How you doing, bro?
I'm doing good, boys. I got my box of Kleenex, and I'm ready to hand them out tonight.
All right. We don't cry easy, so, you know, there's no crying in baseball. It's baseball season,
yeah,
baby.
Yeah. Yeah, but I got some Kleenex with somebody out there, and I think that person knew who they are.
Well, he got the Kleenex ready for you. Whoever you are, he's got it ready for you. So as we get ready to get into everything, we have this segment of the show is called The Intro to Let You Know. We break down everything that we might get to, we might not get to. I'm going to run it through for you real quick so you know what topics are on tap for tonight's show. First off, we're going to talk about the NCAA, talk about the Final Four. There's a lot. The coaching carousel is moving in full effect. It's got like a turbo booster, like a NOS canister attached to it. So it's really moving fast. A lot of movement going on. We're going to talk about that, some good moves, some bad moves. Some jobs might be opening up. Rutgers. some gigs might pop open. We got some refs getting out of pocket in the NCAA. You know, we got the situation with the O'Bannon lawsuit. Seems like it's coming to a head, and it's got some ADs out there shook. There's a lot going on in college athletics right now, particularly NCAA hoops that we got to get into. Then we're going to hit you with the funky editorial. We're going to kind of give you some context on the Miami Heat's historic 27-game win streak. So we're going to touch base on that, talk a little bit about that. Then we're going to hit you with some NFL talk. Tony Romo got paid a buttload of money. Some people hate it. You know how that goes. Anytime a cat gets money, people going to hate. So it's no different with Romo. We may do some hate tonight. We'll see. You also got Matt Flynn getting traded from Seattle to the Raiders, which then led to Carson Palmer getting traded from the Raiders to the Cardinals. So there's a lot going on there, a lot of quarterback talk. Then we got the Geno Smith situation. A draft, quote-unquote, guru comes out and says some pretty derogatory things towards Geno Smith about his character, about his work ethic. We'll have to get into that. Then we got some opening day MLB talk, some storylines that we may be interested in coming into the season, some early, some extra early favorites, teams that we think might have the potential to last a distance of 162-game season. So we're going to get in all of that, and then we're going to hit you off with the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week to close out the show. Wow. So let's just go ahead and jump right into it. We're going to talk about the Final Four. Now, right now, we got Wichita State, a 9 seed. We got Louisville, a 1 seed. We got Michigan, a 4 seed. And then we got Syracuse, another 4 seed. So this is a Final Four that as of right now, no one in the country picked these 4 teams. No one in the country picked these 4 teams. Usually there's 1 or 2 cats, or maybe more, who got the Final Four right, who got the Sweet 16 right. No one in the country got all 16 Sweet 16 teams this year. That's how difficult of a bracket this was this year. That's how unpredictable and how volatile this bracket was. Before we really get into talking about the Final Four itself, first we got to kind of get in here and talk about our brackets and how we deal with our brackets. We have Larry Randall, CEO of Resistance Digital Solutions. Resistance Digital sponsors our bracket challenge. So we want to give an update on that too. So, D. Wills, how'd your bracket do, man?
You know, we all took a hit, but I guess I'm the highest ranked RSG member in here trying to hold it down, because the whole idea of this is, can you beat the RSG crew? Last year they couldn't do it. I stood on top, waving my middle finger like Mutombo. But I'm sitting at fifth, and it was tough, man. I got caught up in all the hype. You know, the Oregon one, I talked about Oregon. I had them going far. Then when I did my final sheet, I had them losing to St. Louis. And so some of those picks, I think, you know, in a tournament like this, they make a difference. The Indiana one, you know, my gut feeling was that they go plays, they go like five or six possessions without letting their best player touch it. And, you know, that's what you saw again. The Georgetown going down, I know you crying, Game Changer.
That was crazy.
But, you know, Louisville, I called it, you know, we debated back and forth. I mean, it was something about them. They just did their thing. But the Michigan one, you know, you and I have been going back and forth with, early on in the thing. But, you know, they're my all ADD team. You know, they didn't look good because they couldn't focus during the regular season. But if you look at it, I felt like they could focus in the tournament. And they ended up more than I anticipated. So my bracket, I'm sitting at fifth in the tournament. There's no way I can win. I was trying to interrupt the top three. But I think I'm sitting above, I think, both of y'all. But I'm doing all right, considering the bloodbath. There's more red than green. That's all we got to say. I think most people got more red than green on AC. It's hard for me to look at. I got this big Indiana sitting right in the national championship thing. It's just staring at me, but it got a line through it. That right there tells you all you need to know.
Yeah. It was a tough go of it. We all had a tough go of it with these brackets. I think I'm sitting eighth. I think Larry's tied for sixth, right behind you. We all used to finishing higher than this, and it just wasn't happening this year. Throw out the conventional logic when you have a 9 and 2 4s, nobody's going there with their brackets. Larry, how did your bracket go, man?
Well, my bracket went all right for the first day. I'm notorious for being a quick starter, but I tend to run out of gas after the first day. The team that really killed me was New Mexico. Nobody had New Mexico losing that game. You know, from a lot of the pundits that were contributing to the pre-bracket selection, had New Mexico going to the championship game. And like a goof, I followed them and was like, okay, well, yeah, this team does look pretty good. Let me put them in a championship game. So after they lost, my bracket was pretty much done after the first day. You know, they say easy come, easy go, but that was a tough one for me. And it was really disappointing because just about every other thing that I had predicted happened. I mean, I had Bucky going down. You know, I was telling y'all, that was my upset pick. I got all of the 5-12 matchups correct. So when you pick 3-12 seeds to win, then you should be winning this bracket challenge. I mean,
right,
there
right.
isn't much about it. But, you know, like I said, when New Mexico lost, that was the end of my bracket. I mean, I've been kind of sticking around because I had Ole Miss making a little bit of a run. But they were really my only dark horse that I had going far. And I figured everybody had Georgetown winning. So, you know, New Mexico, man, I'm never picking them again. They're like Iowa State when they lost, when they were a 2-seed. When was that? Probably like 2000 or something like that. I'm never picking New Mexico again. Ever.
Yeah, you were. And that Iowa State team, that was back in the Marcus Spicer days.
Marcus Spicer, yeah, there you go.
He went on to be a bust for the Bulls, too.
Was it Fred Hoiberg on that team, too? Or
yeah,
like that?
Probably.
Yeah.
Everybody
jumped on that thing. Everybody jumped on them.
Yeah.
Hoiberg, the whole nine. Yep.
Yeah, and Larry, I empathize with the New Mexico pick. I was on New Mexico as well early, and at some point, you know, I was telling this to PhD, you know, because he had New Mexico going far too, and I said at some point, I looked at my bracket, and I said, why in the hell do you have New Mexico in your Final Four? And you know, I had a conversation with myself, and I was like, I don't know. I thought that was your idea. You know, I looked in the mirror and said, I thought that was your idea. So we had to scratch them off the line because we didn't really have no real rationale because I hadn't seen them play. But I was with you, man. I was hearing all the hype, and I was sold on them. And then I was like, you know what, man? This team reminds me of Missouri from last year. last year's bracket, Missouri was a 2 seed, wound up losing in the first round like Norfolk State or somebody like that. And that's the vibe I started to get from this New Mexico team. And that's why I had, you know, I knew that that West region was going to be a chaotic region. They call it chaos for a reason. If it was predictable, it would be chaotic. You feel me? So I knew it was going to be chaotic. I had Pittsburgh coming out and going to the Elite Eight, and then Ohio State going to the Final Four out of the West. And, you know, Wichita State beat Pitt and kept it rolling. I knew Gonzaga was going to go down. I thought Wisconsin would do a little bit better. But overall, man, that West region chopped up my bracket. I did pick LaSalle. I did call LaSalle getting Kansas State. I didn't like Kansas State. Georgetown and FGCU just murdered me. I had Georgetown as my champion. I was rooting for the Hoyas to go all the way this year because it was anybody's. And they didn't do it. Indiana didn't do it. Michigan, man. Michigan's a team that, you know, we're going to get into that in a second. Well, Michigan kind of caught me off guard. You know, D. Wills was talking about him. I'm gonna give him his credit on air, on tape, put it on wax, and give him his credit. He called the Michigan play. For the listeners out there, if you listen to D. Wills, you made some money. If you listen to me, you didn't make no money. looking at this Final Four, hey, I got to get a man his credit, man. Got to get a man his credit.
We had a legendary text going back the night that Georgetown lost.
I was pissed off. You see, because with me, the Georgetown loss was personal, man. That's my squad. That's my team. And, you know, they lost
and
to
you FGCU. Had the man crush on your boy Shaka. It was like, you know, they hit you with the double jab. I thought it was in the car to get you.
Yeah, man, y'all had me on watch, man. Y'all was looking out. Y'all informed the police department that I might be out in the street smashing stuff. You know, I kicked over a couple garbage cans. You know, I was upset, man. Yeah, VCU went down. The next day to Michigan. So, yeah, I was hot the first weekend, man. I was hot. Mm-hmm. None of my teams got out of Wisconsin to get out the first weekend. I was mad, man. But life goes on. Life goes on. The tournament continues. Survive in advance. And we are now at the Final Four. We got four teams left. So, Larry, who do you like out of this foursome right now? The last four teams standing, you know, who do you like to pull it out? What are some matchups that you really are looking forward to out of the two games? Which game are you most interested in seeing?
Well, I definitely got to say the Michigan-Syracuse game is going to be the game to watch. You know, I'm not 100% sold on Wichita State. I think Louisville got the easy matchup out of these Final Four teams. But, you know, when I see Syracuse, I don't see a team that has enough outside shooting to be able to compete with their zone. I mean, just think about it for a second. There was a 7-footer that got his shot blocked 6 times. How do you get your shot blocked 6 times when you're 7 feet tall? Like, I mean, it ain't like me, Mr. 5'8", trying to go up in the land of trees and trying to dunk on somebody, you know? You're 7 foot tall. You like AP All-American, blah, 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 and you just get manhandled. And I know it was a team effort, but that zone looks pretty unbeatable right now because I don't know anybody in college basketball that can shoot that well from the outside. Now, the thing about Michigan is they got that one cat, and forgive me for not remembering his name, but...
House kid. Oh, Canada!
Yeah, buddy. There you go. Now this cat. Let me tell you about this cat. You know, they were talking in the games, the Michigan games that I got to watch. They were saying how this guy is such a great shooter, but he's been in a slump. Well, then you go see the last game that they played, and this dude is shooting the lights out. So I want to see him match against that Syracuse zone. And if he gets off, then Syracuse could be in trouble because I don't know if they had a firepower to match.
Yeah, and I think you hit a really good point. Syracuse is a team, again, I got like three or four teams I don't trust. I don't trust Boeheim. I don't trust Self. I don't trust Roy Williams. So you know, some of these guys, they come in, and if you saw Syracuse in the Big East, with championship against Louisville just basically took their heart. They didn't look like they competed. And I was like, this team doesn't look like they got a dog in them. So they surprised me to get – if you're talking about one team that surprised me to get here was Syracuse. Because I just felt like, you know, sometimes Bay Area teams just are – you know, they'll come with a dog, man. So – but this is Michigan's the one team that has shooters and has guys who can penetrate you. When you think about 2-3 zone, and they got a big – and McGarry, who you can put in space, and now he's playing both those bigs together. So I think this is going to provide them with the biggest challenge. A lot of it's not just the shooters that they have, but McGarry's playing so active that in the zone, if you lose him, he's going to get rebounds and putbacks. So I think it's going to be a great game. I think it's going to be a great game. I'm so surprised. I tell you, even worse than Wichita State, I'm surprised Syracuse there. If you saw the way they played in the Big East tournament at the end, I mean, Louisville basically just took their heart. I mean, sometimes you just get beat, but sometimes you get knocked out. And they got knocked out if you saw that game. I mean, Russ Smith was clowning. He had that finger over the eye with the three going up. He had his clown suit on that night in the guard. And I didn't think Syracuse was going. I thought Syracuse would get knocked out early, so they're surprising me.
Now, D. Wills, who you like to win this?
Louisville. I mean, as much as you know me, I love Michigan, but Louisville. What's your boy's name? Is Dang or Dang or whatever? He like Moses Curry. He's like Moses Curry. You know, I was sitting there. I was like, you know, Louisville reminds me of UNLV in that sense of that just physical. This is Wichita State's problem, is that they're physical and they're bully, but they're just about to meet the biggest bullies on the block. So they licking their chops to get physical with Wichita State. You know, I think Wichita State doesn't see many teams that are willing to go that physicalness, but they're about to meet that team that loves it. When I watch them, they got everything. You know, they get after you, they don't give up, and you got to be so disciplined. You know, I think a team like Michigan can play well against them because they got so many ball handlers, and they've seen that kind of pressure with VCU. But what Louisville throws on the back end is they do the VCU pressure with shot blockers. Right. They got the Moses Curry shot blockers with the VCU pressure. That makes it so difficult. Now they got something to play for. You know, playing in Atlanta, Ware's hometown. So I think you know, as critical as I was, and y'all check the tape, I was critical of Patino because, you know, when Patino came out of the league, it was like when he came to Louisville, it was like he took the air out of the ball in offense. You know, pre-league Patino or wherever he was, you know, coming to Louisville, he let the guys play. And it seemed like once he got to Louisville, it felt like sometimes he was taking the ball out on offense. Now he seemed like the Patino that was coaching at Kentucky right now. Like he found his groove, and this team's playing.
And you know, you forget the inspirational piece, the inspirational motivation that Louisville has going for them as well with the Kevin Ware injury, which I still haven't seen, and I'm just not going to watch. That's just one I'm just not going to see. You know, I was going over to my mother's house for Easter, and I came in, you know, brought the family over. We came in right as they were carrying him out on the stretcher, and my brothers was telling me about it, saying, hey, it was pretty gruesome, and, you know, if I was going to see it, I would have had to saw a replay right then. After they started describing it to me, I was like, yeah, I'm good. I really don't need to do that. You know, Larry, did you watch that game in particular, the Louisville game?
I got to watch the Louisville game, and I saw the injury too. And, you know, it kind of hits home with me personally because I know what the kid's going through. I had a similar injury, not quite as gruesome, because I was wearing, you know, pads and stuff like that. But, you know, that's one of those things that, as a team, it's hard to get focused after something like that happens.
That's right.
I'm very surprised that Louisville just essentially put it behind them, and it almost was a magnet for them to focus on and say, we're going to win this game for this guy. And, you know, when you see your teammates doing that kind of stuff for you, I mean, it's you really get emotional for stuff like that. So, you know, I'm glad that they pulled it out despite the circumstances. So they really, to me, I think they're going to win it too. There's nothing really that's going to stop them. I don't see which state putting up a fight. And, you know, the Michigan-Syracuse, they're going to beat up on each other. So it's pretty much in writing. Louisville, you should be taking this championship home with you.
And one of the things that's interesting, and it's kind of this subline, I'm going back and forth because, you know, we're up here in the Chicagoland area. I'm in Rockford, and I've never met so many Duke fans in the Midwest. I mean, I do not believe, but the subplot around Duke, the camp kids versus the park kids. That's what we saw there. The park kids put their hat on. They're like, we're going to straight ball. And the camp kids didn't know what to do. That's a subplot. Hopefully we can talk about this. You know, Jalen made some comments. I was arguing with the Duke guys. We might even get a call from our guy Mo Red at some point because I know I made him mad. But Duke is another team with just no dogs, you know, no fight. I mean, we got Moses Curry on one side. On the other side, I'm like, where y'all at? I mean, they didn't get off the mat. I thought they were going to lick their chops. And like, you know, the line I put was I thought they were going to look at him like, because at first Steph Curry would look at him like Drago. Like, if he dies, he dies. I thought they were going to come at him. But that boy, Russ Smith, brought that black top. Like, I'm going to, like game 15, we're about to run y'all. And that competitiveness. So it's one of the things I hope at some point we can say, okay, what is this thing about Duke? It was Jalen Wright. I love to have that conversation.
Well, let's talk about that, because one thing that I'm noticing as a trend in the NCAA in general, and I think you're seeing it with these Final Four teams, is that some of these so-called blue bloods, man, some of these blue blood programs, the North Carolina, the Dukes, they're not getting the level of, this isn't Duke in the late 90s where they had McGetty and Elton Brand and William Avery and cats like that who would go out and they could play playground ball. You know,
that's right.
The last couple of years, Coach K has kind of gone away from getting guys who are elite guys because he doesn't want to deal with the one-and-done cats. And so he's gotten guys who are good players, but they're going to stay for 3 or 4 years. But in the same sense, I don't know if these guys are as talented as Duke guys traditionally are. You know, I think they get the perception that they got game just because they go into Duke. You know, it's the whole McDonald's All-American thing. Is the guy at McDonald's All-American who happens to be going to Duke, or is it because he's going to Duke that he's a McDonald's All-American? You know, and that's what I see with this Duke squad, is that, you know, and North Carolina, and you can see it at UCLA. Some of these squads just haven't had those and some of these coaches I feel like have been exposed. You know, we talked about this last year. If you're a good coach, anytime you have more talent, you should never lose. Because that means if you have more talent and you lose, you got out-coached. Now, good coaches, that should happen on a rare occasion. And it seems like with some of these big-time programs, you got these coaches who are just used to having more talent, and now that they don't have more talent, because Kentucky seems to get everybody, and Michigan's had some good recruiting hauls. Syracuse has gotten some good recruiting hauls. Now that these kids are going elsewhere, and coaches like Roy Williams, you got a coach, man. And, you know, it's yet to be seen whether or not Roy Williams can coach. Ben Howland, you know, you had a ton of talent when you got there. You know, I don't know how many pros are on those UCLA teams that went to those three straight Final Fours. You had Aaron Aflalo, just a notch or two below being an all-star caliber NBA guard. You had Drew Holiday, all-star guard. You had Russell Westbrook, all-star guard. Kevin Love, one of the top three power forwards in the league when he's healthy. So you had an unbelievable run of talent at UCLA, and since that talent is gone, you ain't done nothing. You know what I mean? So can you coach? And can you do more than sell a brand? You know, that's what these guys are good at, is selling the brand. Even a guy like Bill Self, I feel like, falls into that category sometimes. You know, they just lose too often to teams without as much talent, for my taste. You know, UCLA made a move. They got rid of Howland and brought in Steve Alford. What do you think of that move, T. Wills?
Well, I think that is the – but, you know, I figure we talked about this. I think we were going back and forth some other stuff. But I think it's the kind of I think Alford's the right guy for the job, because he's a guy that's trying to remake himself. You know, he got put back – he got put out to the gulag, and he's trying to find his way back to the – that's the kind of job he could take and make happen. And as long as they invest in him in the long run, I actually think the USC hire is better for that area. But I think Alford's found a way to work with some kids. He's doing some recruiting on the West Coast. So he might be a good one. But I think, you know, UCLA's problem is they got Notre Dame disease. They think it's 1972. They think Lou Alcindor's coming through that door. Bill Walton's coming through that door. It's Gail Goodrich is coming through that door. That's not happening. There's two. Because, you know, you don't have WD. You know, all these things they think, and they got to get past it. If they can get past it, there's enough talent in California to do it right. I think the coach might be the right hire if they give him a shot.
Yeah, Larry, you got any thoughts on the Steve Alford hire at UCLA?
I don't think much of Steve Alford. I still got a lot of gripes with some of the stuff that went down at Iowa. For those that are not in the know, he effectively did whatever he could to protect a player that was accused of assaulting a lady on campus. I don't have any place for scum in sports. So, you know, for a guy like that to get hired at UCLA is a bit disappointing in my book. I know they're in a situation where they need to get I guess what you could call a named guy, but, you know, hiring him versus hiring a guy like, you know, Bruce Pearl or something like that, there's no difference in my book. All of them are scum, and they shouldn't be at a program as prestigious as UCLA's.
But now, you're not gonna get anybody else. Who are you going to get? If Shaka, those guys, the two guys are smart enough to understand, I can win without dealing with the craziness of UCLA because they're delusional. Who are you going to get?
Well,
who's not a Bruce Pearl?
And I understand that, too. But at the same time, I mean, look what Northwestern did. You know, they went out and got the top assistant on Duke. So
yeah, but he's smart enough not to go to UCLA.
It would have been a better hire to get somebody to give it a fresh start, because I don't necessarily think a retread is going to be the route to go with a team like UCLA. They need to remake their whole brand. Okay, at this point, you got to admit, because they're not getting the top notch recruits anymore. I don't think. So
do you think,
why not?
You think they go up to the
This is a question I'll ask. This is a question I'm going to ask, and I want you to answer, D. Wills. You know, things soured with Howland. You know, you had reports of him kind of letting the inmates run the asylum to a bit. Is this really, you know, the pendulum has to swing the other way. How far depends on the guy that they bring in. Is Alford going to swing that pendulum, or is he going to continue to do the same? His track record says the facts say that, you know, he has a record of kind of keeping it the way it's been there. So is this enough of a change for UCLA? I think that's the big question. I think that's what Larry is seeing, having some questions with it, is this really taking him in a different direction than Howland had him, other than the fact that it's a different name?
Well, my problem is they're getting because of who they think they are. So, I mean, to do what y'all saying means you got to go through the 12-step program, right? They're not going through the number. They're not even through the first step. UCLA still thinks they can find Wooden. They haven't figured out that you got Lob City down the road. We got the Dodgers. We got the Lakers. You know, it's too much noise in L.A., right? And so they're getting – they would never hire a top assistant. They're only going to hire because they, who they think they are is going to be a sitting coach. They didn't get to the point where Notre Dame finally got is like, we just need to find a solid football player, football coach. Like, we need to, we tried all this stuff, Weiss, everything else, and finally Notre Dame said, we need to find a solid football. Who's the best football coach we can find? As soon as they decided to do that, look what happened. And I don't think UCLA is there. You know, they got to, it's because if you think about UCLA as an athletic program, their prestige is not just in basketball, it's in football. So they've been trying to right the ship on too many fronts. The best coach they had was Lavin, and they ran into some issues. He ran into some issues. But if you think about the perfect coach for L.A., that he was. And they couldn't work through his issues that he ran into. But he was the best coach they had for the match that they had in L.A. Kids were coming to play for Lavin.
Yeah. So you got that situation out in Cali. And we'll see how it all plays out with UCLA. You know, I think Alford will have some success. But, again, in 10 years, will we be back at this point again? Because Howland has success as well. So, you know, I think you're on to something talking about how UCLA sees itself. They got to get some better facilities out there from what I hear.
Yeah,
they have to do an internal makeover. They're like a young lady that needs to look inside first. You know, she's putting on all the makeup and dressing up and talking about how she needs the baller and chasing the cats with the Mustangs. But, you know, you're living in the projects. You know, how about you get your act together first before you expect somebody else? You know, you're expecting to attract a level of clientele that you're not really ready to serve. So on the other side of town, though, you got a situation in USC. Had an open coaching position. Basically, since January, they fired Kevin O'Neill in January and have been, you know, they had a coach operate under interim status, and now they've hired a coach. In turn, you know, his job has been open since January. They hired a coach who 2-3 weeks ago, none of us knew who he was. So, I mean, is that a good move? And they hired Andy Enfield from Florida Gulf Coast as a new coach at USC. I don't know. It seems a bit knee-jerkish to me. What do you think, Larry?
Drinking the Kool-Aid is what I think. I mean, you know, I mean, that's the great part about the tournament, but that's also the bad part about the tournament. You know, if you take a no-name somewhere, then automatically you're on the national stage, you know, for the next hot hire, you know. It's like, you know, I liken it to a lot of the NFL stuff, you know. You take a team from 5-8 or whatever, and then you go the next year and you get this huge contract with another team, and, I don't see it personally. College basketball is one of the toughest sports to try to get a coach for, and I'll admit that fully. But, you know, just going at it with this, oh, well, this team did great. Let's hire this coach because we can get him. I don't think that's a good move. So nobody's ever heard of this guy. Apparently he was doing it with a lot of recruits from the coach that was there prior to him. And now he's got a nice, you know, Pac-12 job. So, I mean, congrats for getting that money grab, but I think – there's going to be some real issues in L.A. on both sides of town.
Yeah, I mean, you can't hate the parlay on Enfield's part, but you just have to question USC's logic in the whole situation. G. Wills, what do you think about that particular hire?
I got mixed feelings. I would say UCLA is at step seven. You know, they at least understand who they are. City of Compton, we love you. You know, USC understands where they're at. And I think that This is a guy who's smart, who can figure it out, who's playing a style of game that I think is appealing. And it depends on USC's approach to this. If they see this is a guy we can grow with, and I think if they take that approach, given the style of play he has, because, yeah, he might be playing with the other coaches' recruits, but I think he's got an appealing style. that I think could work on the West Coast. Again, California's got a lot of players.
But see, that's where I question this, because you know I'm a Shaka Smart fan. I own it. He has a style. He has a system. You know what I mean? In college basketball, I think more than anything is about systems. And you know, when we talk about, you know, what does Roy Williams run? Anybody know? No, nobody knows. You know why? Because he just rolled the ball out and be like, let's get it. You know what I mean? Because I got more talent than the other coach. You know what I'm saying? And that's what I felt like with infield. You know, Brad Stevens. You know, he has a certain style of play. He has a system. You know, Coach K has a system. Boeheim has a system. Beeline has a system. You know, Greg Marshall, he has a system. Infield has some underrated players, and he had those guys playing as a team, which I'll give him props for that. But does that translate to success somewhere else? I don't know, because I don't know how much of the success that they had and the style that they played was player dependent, and how much of it was system dependent. You know what I mean? Like, he had some guys who had some real unique skill sets. I mean, he had the 6'10 dude who could jump out the gym. I mean, he may be able to find some of those in L.A., but then you got to find the point guard. You got to find that point guard with the excellence. Yeah, but again, were they that way because of him, or were they just that way? You know what I'm saying? And that's the thing that I think is hard to tease out, because we don't have enough of a sample set to know. We don't have enough evidence.
They look like an and-one team, though. I mean, for real. I mean, they had a dunker. They had, you know. They were great. But
yeah.
What can you do that year in and year out? I don't think
right.
so.
Right, and were they that way because that's just how those particular cats balled, or was it something that he was doing that got them to be that successful? He may get a group of guys out there who can play and who have a fun style, but are they going to win? I don't know, because I don't know if that group won because of him or they won because of just who they were. You know, and that was the situation on the other side with UCLA back when they were winning. Howland came in. He started winning right away, and people assumed it was because of him. Well, he just seemed, from all accounts, seemed like he just had a focused group of kids who wanted to win, period. You know, you had a Westbrook, you had a Jrue Holiday, you had a Kevin Love, an Aaron Aflalo. You know, those cats are all there. Those guys just wanted to win, and they were kind of self-driven. It wasn't the coach, though. And so how much of that was infield, and it's just not a big enough sample size? So that's the only thing that gives me pause about the whole situation from USC's standpoint, is that your coaching job has been vacant for all this year. So for all the 2013, your coaching job has been vacant, and all of a sudden you fall in love with a guy who you've seen, you've basically known for about 2 weeks. Me, that seems like a bad move. Not that infield is a bad coach. I just don't think it was a well thought out move on UCLA's part. I don't fault infield for doing what he's done. You have to, if a school like USC comes knocking, you almost have to take it, unless you're a Brad Stevens or a Shaka Smart, who I think are going to take. You know, I was thinking about this earlier. Was Syracuse a power before Boeheim came there?
Nope.
Nah. And so I think they're taking the approach, this is not college football, this is college basketball. And in college basketball, you can build a brand into a powerhouse, you can build a school into a powerhouse without being in a Power Six conference. You know, and the way, as much fluctuation and movement as there is today, eventually, if you hang around long enough, you can find yourself in one of those key conferences. And ultimately, it doesn't matter anyway. It's probably a lot easier to be a mid-major than to be a Power Six, because if you win your conference, if you got Power Six talent and you win your conference in a mid-major, you're gonna get in the tournament and be able to make noise anyway. You know, so I think it's just a different landscape, and sometimes we come at it from a college football-centric approach, thinking about how coaches make decisions and how they move.
I would say this, though, that, I mean, USC's had the worst record in the Pac-10 or whatever, the last 2-3 years. So this is going to go up. You know, I don't know what he's going to do, but I think they're going to be better. How much better? Don't know. Because they've had coaches with systems. You almost got to go back to Bibby, right, when you were showing they're winning. But they've had coaches with systems and, you know, and good coaches who had good pedigrees didn't win. So I think if I were if you're asking me where am I going to put my money, I'm probably going to put my money more on the USC side than I am the UCLA side. And the reason, only reason why is I think administratively they got a better sense of where they are and where they need to go than UCLA. Even though I think if given everything, I'm taking into account everything that that has been said about Alford and his background and all that stuff, I believe those are legitimate criticisms of him. But if they give him, from a basketball standpoint, if they give him enough time, I think he can do something. I just don't think UCLA is as patient as I think USC has, because football runs things at USC. So I think they're going to let the basketball program grow in a way. They need to find somebody. They're looking for somebody they could grow the program with, because football is the cash cow.
Okay. Now, we got one more coaching situation to touch base on as we continue this NCAA Hoops talk. You listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, brought to you by Resistance Digital. Make sure you hit up the folks at Resistance Digital to meet all your digital needs at a low, low price. They'll take care of you, hook you up, get your tech needs right, have your tech game tight. Make sure you hit up the folks at resistancedigital.com. So, Mike Rice, Rutgers coach. You know, when we talk about habitual line steppers, borrowing from Dave Chappelle and Charlie Murphy, you know, you got the line steppers. A usual suspect in the category of line stepper is the one, Roger Goodell, known as historical line stepper in our, he's constantly crossing the line. This guy, Mike Rice, wow. He kind of took it to another level. Rutgers head coach of the men's team. He's just going deep in practice on cats. And it's on tape. And so an unnamed employee has complained about Mike Rice. Went to the administration and complained about the treatment of players. He was suspended for 3 games in December upon review of a 30-minute tape. Now, you got 30 minutes worth of, like, two-second footage of you just, like, hemming kids up? That's a lot of hemming. Those are a lot of beatdowns to dish out, you know what I'm saying? So they got tape of this man choking kids by the collar, pushing kids, throwing basketballs at kids, cussing at them, calling them slurs. I mean, it's just nuts, man. It's just nuts. I mean, see, this is what I don't like about college sports, is that there is a culture where you don't value the student athlete and stuff like this is okay. Like, are you kidding me? This won't happen in the pros because those are grown men and you're going to have a fight on your hands. This won't happen in high school. Exactly. Somebody going to go spree well on you. And it won't happen in high school because those are truly kids. You know what I'm saying? And it's not that high stakes of an environment where this kind of pressure is there. But in college, I just, wow. Well, if you haven't seen it, make sure you look it up. Just look up Mike Rice beating on kids. It's ridiculous, man. I want to get you guys' impressions on this situation because I'm appalled. He has to get fired in my book. He has to be let go immediately. I mean, he should have been let go. As soon as this became public, if you're the University of Rutgers and you really want to have a basketball program, you might want to get rid of this cat now, because once kids see this footage, you got nobody signing up to play in your program, and all the cats in your program are going to transfer due to embarrassment. So, what's your take on this situation, D. Wills?
I was in New Brunswick about a month or so ago. It's a great community, great people there. To see this, I mean, when I watched it, I was like, is this a joke? Is this April Fool's? I think you hit it right on the head. It's. This is what people have complained about all the time, that we don't see these young men, because it happens more often to young men in terms of these things as members of the college community. We see them as something else. and it was like he was herding cattle. It wasn't like he was herding even human beings, or he's working with human beings. He was a teacher. And we've all played sports, so I'm not going to pretend like we haven't had coaches who let some stuff go. But to be in a situation with somebody throwing a ball, it's like a second grade stuff you see with second and third graders on the playground, where kids are throwing and hitting each other with balls. I mean, a couple times I was like, I wanted to jump through the screen and jump on them and the way in which these athletes walked away, it says a lot by them and their restraint. Because I know a few of them were like, you know, wanted to do, and see if they had done something, then we would have been talking about how these kids were, bucking against authority and a whole bunch of other things. The fact that they have not fired him says everything you need to say about where people place value. I mean, and that they're trying to justify not firing. I mean, he should have been gone, like, and this is where presidents fail, because this shouldn't even be a decision of an athletic director. This is a decision of somebody in Central Campus.
Yeah, because, I mean, the professor can't, you know, chemistry professor can't go in there throwing arson on kids and throwing all types of, a chemistry professor can't walk into class and just start screaming on kids and throwing, you know, Bunsen burners and flasks and stuff at kids. You just can't do that. You can't do that kind of thing, man. A university wouldn't tolerate this treatment by a staff employee of any student on their campus.
They will walk you right out the door. They might even walk you out.
Seriously, you would get Uncle Phil. You would get Uncle Phil out the door. It'd just be a cut to you.
You look up and you have some people with side holsters standing in your doorway saying, you know, Mr. Wilson, we'd like to escort you to your car. I mean, it's not even that kind of question. It's different rules, man. And if this doesn't say much, I mean, what else says it? I'd love to have, like, someone like Alan Sack on at some point. We'd love to have, we need to get him on, or Ramogi to come on at some point to talk about this stuff. But, yeah, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, and, you know, again, we've all been athletes. We've all been coached hard and had hard coaches. You know, for a moment, I want you to put yourself in the position of one of these players. You know, how would you have responded in this situation, Larry?
Well, you guys know me. I'm a pretty laid-back guy until that switch gets turned. And when I saw the video of what this guy did, I put myself, you know, back in my college playing days and thought about it and said, what would I have done in that situation? And as Della Reese said on Harlem Nights, we're going to be some fighting mugs up in here. That's pretty much how I felt when I watched this video. I mean, I've been undressed by coaches before. I'm not going to lie. And it's embarrassing. And it sucks, but there is a line that you can cross. And it wasn't just crossed. I mean, he jumped over it and looked back and started laughing as he threw another basketball at somebody. So even as a kid, I mean, I guess I was raised different. And I was taught that, you know, people have to respect you. They can disagree with you. They can be angry and upset with you. But there is a line that you can cross, and he has crossed it 100%. Now, I don't see as an institution how you can put up with anything with that regard if you want to be, you know, held as a serious institution. I mean, as a college, when there is altercations that are physical, and I would deem this one as just as much physical as it was mental and emotional. When you have situations like that, it's got to be unacceptable, because then, you know, you lose a lot of credibility with everybody else. So I don't see this guy surviving this. I hope to God that somebody comes to the light and says, look, we just got to let you go because you can't be doing that. Because then maybe, you know, he'll understand how, you know, even if the situation warranted it, there's a way to handle that, and you handled it poorly at best. So I would say adios.
Yeah, you know, putting myself in that situation, you know, I at least walked out. I mean,
right.
Man, he's punking these cats, man. I mean, he's crossing a line where this is a true abuse of authority. In the most egregious kind of a way, this guy is abusing his ability, his authority, his position. You know, he's supposed to be a leader, man. And what are you modeling to these cats right now, man? Every time a cat makes a mistake, you bum rush him and tackle him. You know, you give him a forearm shiver to the throat, you know, throwing balls at cats because they messed up the layup line. Right, cats shouldn't mess up a layup line, but come on, man. It's not that serious, man. And when we get to a point where, you know, and it's something that as a coach I have to check myself on a lot of times and remember, this has to be fun. You know, these are young people. This has to be a fun learning experience for them. And once it becomes about me and what I want and what I think needs to happen and what I want to do and how I want things to go, then I need to stop doing it because it's not about what I want. It's about the experience for the young people. And this cat here has totally lost sight of that. He has no clue why he is coaching basketball at this point. And even the understanding and perspective to understand that basketball is a game, and it's not a game that involves fighting. You know what I'm saying?
And I mean, and he's playing dodgeball with these kids. I mean, for real. I mean,
it's
just like the movie, you know, where the dude was throwing wrenches at the dudes. You know? I mean, you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball, but dang, you know, this ain't a movie, man.
Oh, man.
If he would have got a free will, then folks would have said the player was wrong. See, that's why, you know, people don't know what gets you. You don't just go over the top like free will. People get you there.
Right. And that's the double standard at play. Again, so now, you know, if I'm one of these players and I'm thinking, yo, man, I'm tired of putting up with this. I don't need to take this. I don't got to deal with this. But I'm not that great, and there aren't really any opportunities for me to transfer, and I really like going to Rutgers, and I like going to Rutgers for free. So these kids are really invested in this school, feeling like this is not – they're invested in the opportunity that the NCAA sells, but now you have this guy mistreating them because, one, if they transfer, they lose a year of eligibility. That's a year that they got to pay, you know what I'm saying? And so how does that what recourse is it for these student athletes for real? What agency, what pool do they have? None, because the system is not designed to benefit them. And that's what irks me about college athletics is that none of the rules in place, none of the governing principles are designed to benefit the student athlete in any way, shape, or form in the year 2013. In the year 2013, none of these rules benefit the student-athlete. Maybe in the 60s, maybe in the 70s, the system made sense. In 2013, the system does not benefit kids.
And they'll fine you for getting a little extra, getting $100, but NCAA probably won't come in at all with this guy throwing balls and abusing these and hitting these kids and yelling all kinds of things that are very inappropriate. And today, I mean, we're just not going to talk about the language that was used, derogatory term, and all that stuff.
Exactly.
But if a kid gets a ride home to see his mother, you know, with some money, then we all running out. See that right there?
Right.
Just doesn't make any sense.
And that's why I felt like when the whole Penn State thing happened, that's why I felt like, you know, the NCAA there was no way the NCAA could not do something right there. Whether they were in the right to do anything, I didn't care. You guys have done whack stuff all the time to kids when they've gotten $200 for groceries from an AAU coach. You making them sit games. In situations like this, you have to do something. Now, because of what you've done in the past, because of how you've handled little things that don't give anybody a competitive advantage. Getting $200 worth of groceries from my AAU coach is not going to help me make any more shots. is not going to help me be a better passer, a better rebounder, or anything like that. You know, as Bo Ryan once said when asked about the impact of social media on the play and how he was going to deal with his players and having access to social media, Bo Ryan said, ain't nobody Facebooking on the block out. In other words, how does this give me a competitive advantage or disadvantage? It doesn't. So why does it matter? Why are you talking to me about this? It's the same thing with a kid getting groceries or a kid selling his own jersey. It doesn't make him a better ball player. He still got to go out there and play and win games. You know what I'm saying? It's not giving that school any more of a advantage than being in a Power 6 conference already gives you an advantage. So I just there's so many hypocrisies within the system. You know, something, this dude needs to be fired, and he needs to be fired by Rutgers. The NCAA shouldn't even have to blink, bat an eye at this situation. Rutgers needs to handle this. And if Rutgers doesn't, you deserve to be a basement-dwelling program for as long as you exist. You deserve to be in a basement, whatever league you're in, and I hope your basketball program folds, because this is terrible. It's a travesty, and you should not let this man continue to coach. That's me on my soapbox. I'm hopping down. You listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio, wrapping up our college hoops conversation. Got a little heated, you know, in my chest about this Mike Wright situation. But we got to move on. Now we're going to get into the funky editorial, talking about the Miami Heat. And I said it with an S, the Heat. That's how they say it in the hood. You know, they don't really deal with appropriate English. You know, last year in the finals, it wasn't the Miami Heat versus the Oklahoma City Thunder. It was the Heat versus the Thunders. All right? The Heat versus the Thunders. Oh, man. We're going to get into the funky editorial, like, right about now, though.
Fellas, the one thing we need to say, shall we say it, y'all? Melvin,
right.
Jimmy,
right.
Coleman, Ryan, say it.
Yeah.
Everybody want to get funky one more time.
All right, this edition of the Funky Editorial. We are talking about the Miami Heat and their 27-game win streak. All I can say is, wow. I'm going to let you guys weigh in first on how you feel about the streak, but I was highly impressed. LR, how did you feel about the streak?
Well, I alluded to it earlier. I got my Kleenex box out, but I'll get to that in a moment. The streak was pretty amazing. I've never seen an NBA team dominate like that since the Beloved, the Bullies, when they went 72-10. Pretty impressive. The only thing that I gotta say is that the East is hot garbage. So while I'm impressed at the streak somewhat, I take it with a grain of salt because the East is bad. I mean, it is bad. And I haven't seen this bad in a while, but, you know, there really wasn't anybody to stop them from doing something like this. And as for the Kleenex thing, I got the Kleenex for LeBron. You want to sit there and cry and talk about physical play when you be trying to put your sack on people's heads when you be going to the hole? LeBron, if you're listening, quit playing with me. Put the Kleenex down, quit the crying, and play some ball. And I am going to laugh at you and the rest of your squad, especially Chris Bosh, who got their cookies took from Heinrich. So you know I was just chomping on them tears after the game because it was my team that ended it. So if y'all, you know, going to get y'all wish, y'all going to get the Bullies in the first round. And I'm going to tell you good luck with that. And I also want to give a quick shout-out to my boy Kurt Brown, who was waving the pom-poms on Facebook, and I had to put him on blast saying that, yo, the Heat, you got the most talent in the East. You shouldn't have lost to any team in the East, and you lost to the Bullies, minus 3 of 8 marquee players. So here we go. I see you in the playoffs.
Oh, wow. Uh-oh. Daggers. Shots fired.
The phone might ring now.
Oh,
Mr.
man.
Brown's going to be on the phone. Who's on the phone? Mr. Brown's on the phone.
Oh, man. Shots fired outside the club. So Larry's impressed, but he's not impressed. He's impressed, but he's not impressed. And that brings up a valid point when you talk about this streak. You know, D-Wheels, I want you to give us some more context when we talk about this streak. You know, yes, it's historic. 27 games is hard to do. I don't care who you're playing against. It's hard to beat, you know, anybody, do anything 27 times in a row and be successful at it. What do you make of this in a historical sense? Where are you placing this as far as team sport feats?
Well, it's not over. I mean, because it's got to be in context. I mean, if they win the championship, then it's going to be a much bigger deal than if they don't. I think it's how they finish the season will have a lot to do with how this is remembered. It's an impressive streak. I mean, if you think about it, Denver had a 15-game winning streak, and they were hot, and they lost to New Orleans. It's hard today in the NBA with social media and everything else and the games and the travel to do something like this on a consistent basis. And so I think it's amazing. I always laugh when I hear Bull fans, I mean, lately talking about LeBron crying when they cried when the Pistons did that to Michael and everybody went to cry and talk about why people are trying to be too physical. So I often laugh when I hear Bulls fans talk about that. That's why I posted a picture of the Pistons and the Bad Boys up on the website, I'll be on my Facebook for Bulls fans who are trying to talk about LeBron when they did the same thing with Mike. But I digress. In terms of it all has to do with how they finish. If they don't win the championship, it was just a nice run. They win the championship, back to back championships, plus they went on 27. That tells a different story.
Hmm. Okay, so now we got Detroit in the house. First it was the Chicago Miami thing. That Detroit swinging back and throwing blows. You know, ultimately, man, I think this streak was great. I agree with you, D. Wills. I think the full context of it. I think for it really to hold a whole lot of weight and significance, it has to be accompanied with a title. As Larry pointed out, I really don't see any true obstacles in the Heat's way. You know, no Derrick Rose this year. Dwight Howard's in the West. You know, the Pacers have been without Danny Granger all year, arguably their best player coming into the season. Brooklyn hasn't figured out how to play together. Atlanta's Atlanta. What are they?
New York's
a fifth seed again. New York was old. They start out the season hot. But, you know, it's a long season, and attrition has taken toll on them. So the East is wide open for the Heat to just kind of, you know, what's going to be crazy is if they have a historic playoff run where they go, you know, 12-0 until they get to the playoffs. You know, whether they run through the East like that and, you know, they get to the finals and can they complete a 16-0 playoff run? You know, that's a possibility. But either way, it takes a ton of concentration to win 27 games in the NBA, traveling, you know, going into different cities, you know, winning, playing a game, getting on a bus, playing a game the next day. It takes a lot of concentration. And everybody has to bring it and everybody has to be focused. I think what was really phenomenal about the streak was LeBron. LeBron has pushed his game to a place where I think we all thought he should have been, and we all knew he could take his game, and he's living there. He's not doing it just like on certain nights. He's just living in that zone where, yo, this is just how I get it done. This is how I bring it every night. And he is, if there was ever a threat to Mike's title, this is it. And whether or not he gets there, we will see. But as far as having a legitimate being a legitimate threat, this is it. I never saw Kobe as a legitimate threat. LeBron is a legitimate threat. Right now, he is still just a threat. He's not sniffing it. He's not close. But he can do things that Mike couldn't do on the court because of his physicality, because of the physical gifts that he has, and because his floor game is a little bit more advanced than Mike's as far as how he utilizes. They both have amazing floor games. Mike didn't utilize his floor game in the way that LeBron utilizes his. So I'm going to go on record saying that because, again, I've been a big LeBron critic, but that was always – my critiques were always with a caveat. It wasn't that I didn't like the dude. It was just he had to do some things and he had to be different. So the boy is different, all right? The boy is different, and the boy is playing a different brand of basketball, and it's something that I enjoy watching. And he's matured more. He's able to handle situations a little bit better. I know, Larry, you brought the Kleenex for him. You know, I thought he said what he needed to say. I didn't really think any of it was necessarily dirty. The Taj Gibson foul was a hard foul. Maybe that one, you know, it didn't seem like he really made a strong play for the ball. I think the big thing with the Taj foul is Taj didn't want no part of LeBron's body and just kind of stuck his arms out and janked him instead of stepping in front of him with his chest. Heinrich took one for the team. Heinrich the goon.
He got pancakes.
He got smushed. You know, it was like Bo Jackson on Tecmo Bowl.
But then he took Bosh cookies though, remember?
He snatched Bosh's soul. I mean, Chris Bosh is Chris Bosh, man, and that was just a Chris Bosh moment. You know, where it's just come on, dog, you stick to 11, man.
Speaking of tears, yeah. he's gonna go cry in the car, right?
Exactly. Come on, Bosh. 6'11", and you just let a 6'4" guard come and just yank. Like Heinrich took it from him, like he had a gun on him or something. You know, Bosh is like an old lady trying to hang on to his purse. Like, no, you can't have it. And he just didn't have enough strength left to just make that extra effort to just yank it back. It was crazy. But, yeah, you know, Heinrich definitely took one for the team because, man, you step in front of Bron on a fast break, man, that's got to hurt.
Yeah, he looked like Van Gundy on Lonzo Mourning's leg when he had that brawl.
Yeah, holding on
for life.
But, you know, this season I think for right now is really – it's the Heat for the taking. The Heat can make this their year. You know, it'd be interesting to see if they ever decide as a unit in the season, while D-Wade is still young enough and still has the legs to do it, if they ever really decide to sell out during the regular season and really attack that Bulls record of 72 and 10, if they could get close to it. Because this run, man, was, again, I wholeheartedly agree with Larry. The league, especially the East in particular, they definitely hit a soft spot in their schedule where they weren't facing hardcore competition on a night, or even every four nights, you know, playing against some real contenders. But again, the margin of error in the NBA is so small on a nightly basis, really because of the mental focus it takes to compete night in and night out. So winning 27 games is a true feat in itself. But as you said, D-Wills, how they handle it from here on out will really say a lot about the squad. So
what,
I want to move on to the NFL talk real quick.
Can you give me just one second? Because there's a lot of talk about what's Foster. What's your analysis and thought of him? I mean, I don't think he gets enough credit, but what's your opinion of him as a coach? Because we were very critical at points as they were going along this journey. But what's your thought of him as a coach?
You know, I think
I think he's the same guy he was before. I think he's always been a really smart tactical coach. I think where he struggled early on was trying to figure out how to get – he was having trouble figuring out how to negotiate the LeBron-D-Wade dynamic early with the team. And that was where he struggled. As a coach, and that's where Phil Jackson may not have struggled. But as a coach, you have these two supernova talents at the height of their powers. Somebody's got to lead and somebody's got to follow. And you can't go night in and night out taking turns. You can't play that way. You know, I think he could always coach. I think his thing was he had to figure out how to get these two guys to settle in and figure out who was going to be what, who was going to be the one, who was going to be the two. And once those two figured it out amongst themselves, I don't know how much of a role he played in that, everything settled down, and it allowed him to settle down. It allowed him to not have that burden anymore of worrying about, I got to make this work, I got to figure this out, I got to make this work. They worked it out. They figured it out. Now I can coach the team. Now I can do what I do best, which is X's and O's. That's what I think. I think he's the same cat. I don't think very much has changed with him. I think he was always a strong tactical guy. Managing personalities is a whole other thing as far as coaching goes, especially when you're dealing with professionals, especially when you're dealing with professional-sized egos. And then when you got two of the top three players in the league on the same team, how do you figure out who takes who's at number two? You know, it doesn't mean it's a less of a statistical role. It just means that, you know, we're going to run stuff through this guy. This guy's going to be the focal point. And in the NBA, that's a big deal. In college, it may not mean so much because, again, college basketball is more system-based. You know, you can run a pattern offense. In the NBA, ain't nobody running a motion. Ain't nobody running a wheel. Ain't nobody running a flex. You know, they may have some flex actually here and there, but a lot of it is we're going to get the ball to our best playmaker and we're going to let this guy make some decisions. And then everything else is going to – all the other dominoes are going to fall off of the decisions that this guy makes. And that's how most NBA offenses run. And so when you have two guys who are taking turns being that, it throws everything off. It doesn't allow you to get into a rhythm. So I think Spoelstra is a good coach. I think before he was having a whole lot of trouble managing the personalities in this particular unit. I think he's figured that out to an extent. I think the fellas figured that out and have allowed him to relax and to just fall back and into his lane. And now he can just be in his lane and do his thing.
You get it, man. Okay.
So that's how I feel about Spoke. But now we want to talk some NFL before we wrap up, before we close out, because there were some trades, some heavy movement with quarterbacks that, you know, we want to touch on. I want to get you guys' opinion on. You know, we follow the NFL hard, even during the off season. We go hard like it's in season. So, Matt Flynn to the Raiders. LR, what do you think of this move? This, the Raiders being the Raiders, this is actually progress.
No, it's the Raiders being the Raiders. I mean, you know, ever since Al Davis died, they've been trying to remake themselves, but then they just swooped in and with more stupidity, like they just did this past week. I like Matt Flynn a lot, but I just don't see how he's going to fit on a team like the Raiders. Matt Flynn is, to me, he's a serviceable guy. He isn't going to be this guy who can be the cornerstone of your franchise as a quarterback. I know he gets paid like that, but a lot of players in the NFL get paid like that, and they don't have the talent or the fortitude to back it up. As for what they gave up, I mean, they gave up, like, you know, a fourth, I think I read. It was a fourth-round pick. I don't know if Flynn's going to turn out to be worth it for the type of offense that they want to run. The Raiders are never going to be able to put up numbers like the Broncos or the Chargers when it comes from an offensive standpoint. They should be concentrating on being a smash-mouth team instead of trying to be a run-and-gun team, which I think is the direction that they're going in. I don't think they're going to be 500 this year. You know, they're not going to beat the Broncos. Chargers are going to be a tough out. The Chiefs, I mean, you look at a team like the Chiefs, and, you know, I don't see Oakland finishing better than last. I don't. So if you think it's worth the investment, then good luck to you. But I don't think Matt Flynn was worth the picks that they gave up to get him.
Okay. Now, there was another side to this. This was just one domino in a series of dominoes that fell. You had the Raiders, after acquiring Matt Flynn, they then moved him for Carson Palmer, D. Wills. How do you feel about Carson Palmer getting traded to the Arizona Cardinals? Is that a good fit, bad fit? What do you think?
I mean, I think Carson has been slowly on his comeback. I mean, in Arizona just had problems. And so I think they're looking for stability. I think they're going to be focusing on running the football. He's just going to have to, you know, deal with the play action. Having a Larry Fitzgerald is going to make Carson better. I think he's a stopgap, and I think they needed to really stabilize because of really Fitzgerald. So I think he's going to do all right. I just think that division is so tough. You know, I don't know what Arizona can do, but they got a great defense. If he can, his problem, he's been turning the ball over. I mean, he wasn't always that guy who was turning the ball over, but he's been turning the ball over in recent years. And a lot of it doing was arm strength. I don't think he has a zip anymore, but with a guy like Larry Fitzgerald, you can throw it anywhere. You know, his problem is he has anybody who could even get it close. I think Carson will at least get it within the vicinity where he can do something. But I don't think that puts them over Seattle. I don't think that puts them over the 49ers. I mean, I think, you know, Arizona is just, being Arizona, they got a great defense, but I think Seattle and the 49ers are just too far ahead of them.
Okay. Yeah, that league out there is going to be real tough. And, you know, the Cardinals may still wind up in last in that particular division. With that said, you know, it looks like a couple of teams that may have had their eye on Geno Smith have made some moves. Nowadays, most teams don't draft a quarterback in the first round to have him sit. They're bringing him in, and they're going to play him, and they're going to play him right away and get him out there and get him going and developing. So, you know, Geno Smith's prospects took a hit in that way, where you had two teams that would have been looking for a quarterback come to draft, both finding a quarterback for the moment. And maybe they decide to sit this draft out or go find a developmental quarterback in later rounds. But Geno Smith's stock also took a hit with some comments made by, I'm trying to find this cat's name. Who is this dude? The article doesn't have the dude who made the comments name. But it was in Pro Football Weekly. And the comments were, Smith is not a student of the game, has a nonchalant field presence, does not command respect from teammates, cannot inspire, mild practice demeanor, no urgency, not committed or focused, marginal work ethic, interviewed poorly at the combine, did not show understanding of concepts on the whiteboard, opted to not compete at the Senior Bowl, and has approached off-season training as if he's already arrived, and it shows in his body, with minimal muscle definition or strength, has small hands, glaring ball security issues. So it just really goes in the end, it said he needed to be coddled and cannot handle hard coaching. So really dug into him. And this is the same writer who a couple years ago dug into Cam Newton. He said a lot of favorable things, and I can't find the guy's name in this particular article I'm reading.
It's Nolan Nowowski or something like that. I mean, he's a well-respected guy. He did make the crazy stuff with Cam Newton. I think I might be the only one right about Cam. But I think Larry had something he was saying, some crazy stuff. We'll get back to that.
You mean Geno Smith is like Aaron Crouch?
Well, the one thing I will say about Geno Smith, well, this is right or wrong, think about game changers. Remember I talked about this. I said, was anybody hotter in the first 2 weeks of – I mean, he was a buzzword, and then he fell off like – crazy, and I was like, how did he fall off? You remember, like, he was the Heisman guy, like, the first 2 weeks. I mean, he's putting up numbers 3 weeks or whatever. Like, by mid-October, you know, he fell off, you know, crazy and never to be seen again. He went to the witness protection program. So, and it didn't make sense to me. You know, these are harsh words, harsh terms, and in a year where there's not a really strong quarterback class, it can be damaging.
Yeah, I agree. You know, we'll see. You know, Larry is has had some astute, if not entertaining, he's profiled some quarterbacks in some interesting ways on here. So what's your profile? What's your critique of Geno Smith, Larry Randall? We got to hear this. Last year, a couple years ago, he called Cam Newton Eric Crouch. So what do you think of Geno Smith?
Well, I'm not going to lie. I agree with Devon on this. The beginning of the season, I mean, he was putting up straight Tecmo numbers. I mean, I think one game he had over 400 yards passing and 200 yards rushing or something like that. I mean, that's nuts. And when I started, you know, looking at the guy's stats, I'm like, this guy's going to be the second coming, you know. I'm thinking he might even be in the realm of RG3 or maybe even better. But as Devon stated, he fell apart at the end of the season. And I don't know if I can attribute that to who they were playing or what, but you know how it is. I haven't looked at West Virginia's schedule, but if I go back and look at it, I can probably guarantee that they were playing some 1AA team. If you're putting up 500 yards passing on 1AA team, then of course you're going to look like a godsend. So that, you know, I was still out. You know, the jury was still out when it came to my judgment. But then when I started reading this stuff, how he is could potentially be the number one pick, almost fell out of my chair. Y'all know how I feel about quarterbacks at the college level. Most of them are out of position, and they're not really quarterbacks. This is no different. I don't really think he's a quarterback. And now that he's shown some, I guess, character flaws, I put him in the same category as I put Cam, quite honest. And I'm not going to say he's Eric Crouch because I think this kid can actually run a little bit. And I know everybody say Cam can run, but Cam can't really run. He's just big and he's hard to tackle. But,
that means something.
They just can't knock him down.
They can't get them down, you know. And that's
so
great,
here, I
want to
do a little exercise before we close out. I want to do a little exercise because, you know, with Oakland was picking at number 3, the Cardinals were picking at number 7, Buffalo, who picked up Kevin Carr, was picking at number 8. Those were kind of the quarterback hungry teams at this point. I'm gonna go through all of the draft picks, and I want you guys to tell me if y'all see this team taking Geno Smith with a yes or no. We're going to see if we can figure out where this cat's going to go, if he's going to go first round or not. All right? So both of you guys just chime in with a yes or no when I give the team. Pick number 1, Kansas City Chiefs.
No.
No.
Pick number 2, Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yes.
Yeah. Who's got yes?
Both of us.
Both.
So, Larry, you got – is that Larry? Who's that, D-Wheels or Larry?
Both of us.
Oh, both of you. Oh, so you guys got them both. I thought he was going to last a while. Okay. Y'all got him going number 2 to Jacksonville. Okay. We'll see how that plays out. I think that's interesting. Maybe Jacksonville is giving up on Blaine Gabbert. You know, we will see. Nobody's predicting him to go there.
I can see him going over.
The Raiders are the Raiders. The Raiders are the Raiders.
The
Raiders will do something stupid. All right, we got like a minute, and I want to get in the dog of the week. So we got to hit it quick, fellas. Larry, give me your dog of the week. The dog of the week is brought to you by Resistance Digital Solutions.
All right, my dog of the week, we kind of talked about it at the beginning of the show, but my dog is going out to Louisville women's basketball player, Shoni Schimmel. This girl did a behind-the-back at the free throw line, went up with a Jordan-esque back to the rim, reverse layup, owned Brittany Griner, and then got in her face and said, "Get off me, B." That's my dog right there. A big wow, wow, wow,
right.
Shoni. You go, girl.
Swag. G Wills, you got about 10 seconds to get this in, bro.
All right, I'm gonna go with that, and then I got two words: Trey Burke.
All right. So mine is Kevin Witt. Get better. You listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. Signing off for this week. Peace.